This is Pittsburgh Section, National Council of Jewish Women, Oral History 2. This is Marcy Schwartz and Shalomi Bistanki interviewing
Edgar Paul Wasser
on February 4th, 1992. Mr. Paul Wasser, last time we met, we talked a lot about the commercial part of your business, and I was wondering if you'd like to make any comment as to the residential aspect of architecture or any of the houses that you yourself have worked on or that you would like to highlight.
Due to the fact there are not many vacant lots in Squirrel Hill, we never did many new houses from the ground up. The one that I think is the nicest is at the corner of Negley and Aylesboro, which I did for Herman Israel in 1956, and it's still there, and it has it's done totally with beams, posts, and planking. The beams were prefabricated and have quite long spans, and the roof is wood decking that spans between the beams, and I think it still looks well. What we did mostly in this area was remodeling and additions to existing homes, and through the years we've done quite a bit of that. And I did some new homes. I did two in Little Washington, and I did one in Wheeling. I did three in Little Washington. I forgot the Vistaki house of all houses. And but that never was our main activity, homes, although I do enjoy doing them. And I think maybe perhaps we only did three or four from the ground up in Pittsburgh, and the rest, as I say, were all alterations and additions to homes. In recent years, there have been even fewer. I think 2 years ago we did additions to two houses on Beechwood Boulevard, and throughout Squirrel Hill we've done that kind of work.
I admire anybody that has any creativity at all, and I know as an architect you must have quite a bit of creativity. And you had described how you built the Israel home, and I know in terms of commercial you did a lot of innovative new projects. Was the Israel home new to the era? Was this a new way of building homes?
I don't think there are too many built with that principle. And yet I think it fits well on the lot, and I think that it blends with the neighborhood, and it's withstood the test of time. In fact, the present owners are very happy with it, and very little change has had to be made to keep it up to date. The bathrooms, I don't think, were ever touched. The kitchen was never touched. It was it still looks contemporary. Yeah.
Mr. Kohlwasser, would you like to comment on your relationship with other colleagues in the field or the career of architecture or other people in architecture?
You mean comment on their what work?
On your
what?
Relationship with them, or is there a relationship? I don't know.
I've through the years I've had a lot of students working for me, and some of them have gone on to start their own practices. I had a partner, George Commanderas, who started with me as a student. He came with a whole group of people from New York City because the Cooper Union School wasn't accredited. And I think that perhaps 8 or 10 of them came to Pittsburgh that year, and I must have had 3 or 4 of them working for me, and George later became a partner. And I think one interesting thing is that one of those students, a classmate of George's, was Arthur Rosenblatt. And he went on to become quite prominent in New York City. He worked for the, Metropolitan Museum. He was director of all architectural expansion and displays, and he was very prominent in New York architectural circuit. And in fact, his son now teaches at Carnegie Mellon. And I went to a lecture one evening there, and the lecturer made reference to Arthur Rosenblatt's son being in the audience and teaching at Carnegie Mellon. So I, after the lecture, I went up and introduced myself, and he's a very nice person, very, very talented, Paul Rosenblatt. And he later asked me if I would help as an assistant in design, freshman design, which I did for one semester, and I really enjoyed that very much. It's really been my only contact with Carnegie Mellon, and I thought it was a very good experience. In fact, I learned a great deal from it, from not only the students, but the program I thought was excellent. They had very inspirational speakers practically once a week, address the freshman students, and I got a lot out of that. They weren't all architects, some were artists, some were sculptors, quite a variety of planners, and it was just a very pleasant experience. But I had Alan Dunn, who's on Forbes Street now, he worked for me for some time, and oh, there are too many to even mention. I always like to have a crowd of people. I don't like to work alone. And, we always had, not always, but most of the time we had students helping us there.
How did you select the students to come work for you? Was there a special criteria?
The last group I actually solicited at Carnegie Mellon, but through the years they have always looked for jobs, summer jobs. In fact, many of them stay on and settle in Pittsburgh, which makes the field, I think, a little bit overcrowded. They take on part-time jobs while they're students. They may meet and marry a Pittsburgh girl, and they tend to stay. They like the city, and I could name very many of them that have done that. But usually they ask if you need some work, some help, and we interview them. And in fact, there was one graduate. I've had three Indian students working for me from time to time, and one in particular, well, one stayed 12 years and is now a Pittsburgh resident. He has a family here. Each one of them went back to India for an arrangement to find a suitable wife, and then they would come back and settled here. But one in particular was just outstanding, unbelievable. I really think he had a genius mentality, and I was very fortunate to have him stay 2 years. In fact, I don't know how he did all that he did. He went to school. He worked for me maybe 30 hours a week. He was very active in the Indian community and quite remarkable.
Would you care to mention his name in case he becomes very famous?
Ranbir Singh. He now practices in, I think it's Coral Gables, Florida, and I think he teaches too at the university there.
When you interviewed the students, was there anything special that would make them qualified to come to work for you? Was there anything that you could sense from them?
Well, I think the biggest thing was our need for help.
Okay.
But in Ranbir's case, I wasn't even looking to hire anybody. And in fact, I told him that I didn't need anyone. And he showed me his portfolio, and it was just so overwhelming that I relented. In fact, he kept calling, and so I said, well, we'll give it a try, although I don't think we really needed anyone at the time. But it was a very nice relationship. I enjoyed having him there.
How many employees do you have today?
We're down now. I have one doing draft. I have a part-time secretary. My son, who's now part-time, who's also trained as an architect, and I have a Korean gentleman who's been with me over 20 years, and who also operates a Jewish delicatessen with his wife and family.
Is that here?
It's, yeah, Adler's. He bought Adler's. And I think he's done very well at that. But we also used to get our share of foreign people. We had, Mr. Chu, for one. And we had an Italian fellow whom a used car dealer, of all people, recommended. And the young man was so, his English was so poor that we really couldn't question him as to what his qualifications were. And I later found out that he really didn't have too much, but he was very bright and he progressed very well and he became very good. I think he was with us maybe 8, 9 years, maybe about 8 years, I guess. So we had people from Italy, Korea. I had an Israeli girl. We've had all kinds of people, which makes it very nice, I think.
I think so. Do you have to register with the state to
get
licensed? Yes,
we have to be registered, yes.
Would you like to comment on the changing mores or the permissiveness as opposed to the way you raised your children then and the way children are being raised today?
That's a hard question. I'm not really an authority on that either.
Well, we don't want authority. We want personal feelings.
I think the young people today have much more opportunity, certainly. They're much more interested in everything that's going on than we were. We lived rather insulated lives, I think, and we were quite unsophisticated. Today, they have ambitions to travel in foreign countries, to meet people from different cultures. We never even dreamed of things like that. I think the economics are quite different, too. During the Depression, people didn't dare think of it in terms of those things. There just wasn't money available. But I don't think the desire was there either. We were, I don't know if you'd call it self-satisfied, but insulated is a good word for it, I think. And I think today the children are exposed to much more and are much more aware of what's going on in the, not just here, but in the whole world. And I don't know if it's permissiveness or... I'm sure the morals are quite different. Young people didn't live together then as they do today. I'm not so sure that's bad, though, but in that they do get to know each other before they marry. And I own a building where we have five apartments. Most of them are occupied and have been by young people. And many of them have been people who lived together unmarried. And I think the great majority of them eventually married the person they were living with, not just got married. And of course, the divorce rates don't reflect that that's makes for a more stable marriage. So it's difficult to say about that. But I think we lived sort of a repressed kind of life. We dated, but it was sort of boys sort of kept stayed with boys and girls with girls, I think, largely. Whereas today, they interact much more, I think, in school and in activities than when we were kids. I don't know if... I think morals are much different. I don't know if it's for the better or the worse, but there is a big difference in the way people grow up. I think, too, in the manner of having more choices and being interested in more things, that they have a more difficult time settling on their life's work, for instance. My son is one example who's gone from trying... At first I thought he was going to be a rabbi as a teenager. Then he had ambitions to be a writer, and he tried it. And then he became a book editor at Random House. Then he went to architecture school, and then he worked in the office. And now he's taking an MBA at Pitt. So I think that that, rather than being the exception, is almost the rule today, that people don't feel... obliged to get settled and start a family. In our generation, a girl going to college who didn't get engaged during the 4 years or meet the man of her life felt that it was perhaps a waste, or at least they had failed in some way. And I know that my wife's friends, there was a rash of engagements and marriages shortly after college. And today it's postponed. I heard of our neighbor's niece just had a baby at the age of 43. Now, that would be unheard of in our time. And that sort of thing is, it's quite different. I'm not able to say whether it's better, for the better or for the worse, though. But the boys sort of ran in a pack, and the girls did too. And the only time that there was any contact between them was on a Saturday night for a date or... a school dance or some activity, but generally the girls were strangers to the boys and vice versa.
At what age did your generation start dating? you know, for
us. I think in my own case, rather late. I'd say the last 2 years of high school, perhaps. The other thing is that we were supervised much more. I remember my parents, we didn't see too many movies, and those that we did had to be approved. My folks read Parents Magazine, and they were, movies were rated. And we were controlled. I wouldn't say we were supervised. We were controlled much more.
And at what age did your children start dating?
Mine are also a little bit slow. I would say about the same time. Yes.
So not much different.
No, not in that respect. But I know some girls of 12 or 13 are very busy dating and very serious about it. And I don't know if that's really changed that much, though, generally.
Mr. Kornweiser, how do you view your accomplishments and your successes?
Well, I always have felt that if we had been able to get larger jobs, of course we would have been more economically successful. We would have had larger fees. Because in architecture, if you do a conscientious job, a small job takes almost as much attention as a larger one would. And for instance, when you send it out for bids, you have to write a specification which covers the same phases of the work. You have to supervise probably just as often as if it were a job costing much more. So I always had hoped that I could get into larger jobs, and it would make life easier because you can assign different phases of it to different people. But when you do small jobs, medium-sized jobs, you really have to be involved yourself in almost everything. And that's one of my regrets, that it never really took off into really big projects. Although I have had projects in the millions, but the majority of the work has been small to medium work.
Well, your name is certainly recognized, so I don't think any apologies have to be made there. But what do you view as your most significant accomplishment? Is there any one particular?
It's hard to say. I think we had a reputation for doing good retail store work, but unfortunately that's very temporary. I went to Monroeville Mall on Sunday to look around, and we had done several stores there. They aren't even in existence anymore, so that that kind of work, if you don't take pictures of it, in a few years, there's nothing to show anybody or for anybody to see. It also changes very rapidly. I noticed that the work that had been done there recently is quite different from what we had done. What your question was now.
What's your most significant accomplishments?
Oh, I think in store work we had built a reputation, and the few houses that we did, I think, were very well received, and I think that they have, as they say, stood the test of time. I think that that house on corner of Negley and Aylesboro still is a good, viable house. In fact, I understand they used to take the freshmen at Carnegie Mellon to see it as a type of construction, as an example of a type of a good example of a certain type of construction. And we really tried hard when we were doing it.
How do you view that? You had mentioned that there is such a difference in the commercial houses now, at the mall, for instance.
Yes.
What do you see as the most significant differences?
Aesthetically, you mean?
Well, however you view the differences.
I think, if anything, there's an improvement. I looked at the Limited store, and they're a good example. They've changed tremendously through the years. And I think today, people are more sensitive to good design. There was a time when things were gimmicky, especially in places like Shadyside. They had the woody look and beams and coach lights and things like that all over the place. Today that wouldn't cut it at all. And I think the design is really quite good. In fact, the Limited looked more like the lobby of a fine hotel or something like that. It's a setting, and it was very skillfully done with more permanent materials, marble and granite, and I thought the clothing was displayed very cleanly, whereas in the old days, as I say, there were gimmicks. Racks had to look like something other than a rack, and today the fittings and the accessories that support or show the merchandise are very beautifully designed and much more sophisticated than in years past.
So when you walk into a store or a home, you really give it a once-over, yeah? In retrospect, is there something you would do differently?
In what respect?
In looking back, in hindsight, is there something you would do differently?
I never promoted or solicited work. I know today that's accepted. And when I was starting out, that was considered not professional. In fact, the size of the sign you were permitted to put on the project was limited. And I think that's occurring in everything. I see hospitals are advertising, lawyers. If you look through the yellow pages of the phone book, the attorneys have full-page ads. I saw one in the paper last night. Is your breast implant giving you trouble? This man will sue the, I don't know the name of the company that sells the material, but I think people are much more promotional minded, and I'm sure we got all our work by word of mouth, and I'm very set in my ways, I'm afraid. I don't know how to do it a different way. And when people would say so-and-so has plans to do this or plans to go into this building or this mall, why don't you give them a call? I was not generally successful at going in cold like that. I had no brochures or promotional exhibits to show people. And for a long time, we didn't need them. Work came in by word of mouth, as I say, and there was a pent-up demand for that sort of thing. But today, it's quite different. People almost think, I believe, that if you don't have a brochure and a resume ready-made and that sort of thing, that you're just are not with it. Yes.
And there was such a time of growth, the 50s and 60s. There was such a time of growth.
Yes, that's true.
The 50s,
yeah.
And 60s. Is there anything in your life you wish you could have changed?
Yes, I would have liked to have traveled more, taken more time off. I'm somewhat of a workaholic. I think because my office is so close to my home, I think nothing of going there Saturday and Sunday, and it's like any other day of the week. And I think if I had been a little more disciplined to get it done, I enjoy it, so I don't mind doing that. But if I had done that, and I'm still doing that, the Saturday and Sunday business, if I had been more disciplined and then done other activities on the weekend, I know there are people who say they, oh, I wouldn't think of doing anything or seeing someone on the weekend. That's my time. Although in my later years, I did become very, my wife says I was obsessed, but I became very interested in figure skating, quite by accident. And I enjoyed doing it, and I pursued it. I really worked at it. I would go two or three times a week to either Monroe, not Monroe, Vermont, but Mount Lebanon. And I met very nice people. I went to a couple of nationals